This is an Enterprise Time Security Podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Simon Baines, CTO of Shield.io.
That's me. Shield.io is an encryption company. We enable people to encrypt their data at use, at rest, and in transit, meaning that they never have to decrypt their data to do searches on it or to do mathematical equations.
If we look at what companies are buying, they're buying encryption at rest, and they think their data in their offices is always encrypted. True or false?
They do. False. I'm going to go straight into blaming politicians for that. Because if you look at the GDPR regulations, it says as long as you have something like TDE, then you're fully covered. TDE is encryption on the disk. It will completely protect you if a random burglar walks into the data center with a sack on their back and steals the hard disk drive. You are totally protected. But if someone actually goes onto the database and logs onto the database, you have no protection at all. Because the moment that data leaves the disk and goes into the database, it's unencrypted.
NIST is paranoid that we're going to hit Q-Day, which is the day it believes that a large number of encryption protocols will fall because quantum computing will be stable enough and fast enough to iterate enough times to break through. It's been running a program to create lattice encryption. What is lattice encryption and why is it taking so long to get it sorted?
I couldn't tell you what it actually is, because it's just such a long piece of paper with lots of different words on it. What I will tell you is, you get this the wrong way around, but we are 10 years away from fusion electricity. We're always going to be 10 years away from fusion, which is a real shame. Fusion or fission, it's the one the sun does. We're always 10 years away from that. Quantum has been kind of like that. Now I'm going to come back, because we do have a problem with encryption currently. Encryption will be broken at some point in the next 4 to 5 years. It's not going to need quantum to do it. It's just going to need some clever bugger to go out and actually look at it and say, ah, there's a pattern there. Because the whole universe is made of patterns. There is no such thing as random. And once someone actually looks at it and does the right program to go through, they're going to start breaking it bit by bit. It hasn't been done yet. It probably won't be done for another 3, 4, 5 years. So we do need to look at new methods. What we don't want to do is to start scaring people. Currently, what we have is working very well, as long as it's implemented correctly. And I say that because most of the times it's not. But currently, the AES encryption algorithms, the AES 256, is very, very secure and does work. And we shouldn't be telling people that it's going to be broken tomorrow, because that will stop them implementing today. By all means, tomorrow replace it. But in the meantime, let us get on and do our jobs. Let customers get on and have their data protected. And NIST can get on and do their work in the background. But please keep it in the background. Let us know that you're doing it. Keep us informed of how it's going. But don't scare people. Don't come out scaremongering.
But one of the challenges with changing any form of encryption is we have such a body of data out there that uses different encryption keys at the moment. Re-encrypting data really isn't viable, is it?
That's a technology problem, and that's down to people like me to make it work. It's not a customer problem. It's down to technologists to say, this is how we're going to do it. It's not for end users to worry about. It's for them to make sure we do it correctly. Is it viable? Currently, I would say probably not. That doesn't mean it's not going to be viable.
One of the things that's been proposed for a number of years is fully homomorphic encryption. We've had attempts to do this. Microsoft did a partial homomorphic. What does it really mean?
The homomorphic is actually incredibly simple in terms of what it means. It's the ability to work on data, keep it encrypted, and get back a Boolean true or false, in essence. That obviously takes an awful lot of grunt, an awful lot of power, and more importantly, a new way of looking at life. There are, as you rightly say, a lot of homomorphic encryption projects taking place at the moment. Microsoft, IBM, Google, SAP. They've all got these nice big homomorphic projects, and they're all doomed to failure. I'll come on to why I believe so in a second. We obviously do a form of homomorphic encryption. We do data encrypted in use while enabling you to do full-text searches and mathematical equations, and we do it in real time, generally as fast as a native database will do. We don't use the homomorphic libraries, and this is why their ones are doomed to failure.
Are you homomorphic or are you not? The issue here is they're using libraries and you're not. What's the difference between what you do and the libraries they're using?
Ours are AES 256 compatible, which means we use AES 256 encryption, which keeps it fully secure. Homomorphic encryption libraries generally, and I use the term generally, use a form of encryption which is patternized to enable you to do that work on the data, and it's not as secure as AES 256. More importantly than that, to crunch up a whole load of sums on a number can take many, many, many cycles and lots of computing power. That's one of the things that we have overcome. So that's our difference, is we don't rely on those homomorphic encryption libraries because, by definition, they're not working.
You said something there that you're using AES-256 and it's more secure than the homomorphic libraries at the moment. But we've been led to believe with the papers and the research that actually homomorphic libraries will raise the level of encryption to a substantially high and complex level.
Yes, they will. Because if you look at our encryption, you have your data encrypted on the disk. You have it encrypted in the SQL engine, in the database, and in transit the whole way across. It's encrypted, which means it's much more secure than if it's just encrypted in the database or if it's encrypted just on the disk. And that's homomorphic encryption, so it will give you that much better level of encryption. I say will because the libraries have got a long way to come if they carry on down the route. I'm very careful on what I'd say that we are or aren't homomorphic encryption. We are encryption. Homomorphic is one form of encryption. We are a form of homomorphic encryption because we enable you to do that mathematical equation on encrypted data without decrypting it. But we are a form of homomorphic encryption, just like AES-256 is a form of encryption. It's a matter of semantics, I'm afraid. It will in time. So we are a form of homomorphic encryption, but I don't believe that the way that people are currently doing it will work because of the speed. It all comes down to how you look at life.
But is this not a revisitation of the AI problem? We've had AI algorithms since the 1960s and 1970s. I have books on my shelf that were written in the 70s and the 80s. Our challenge has always been that we didn't have the compute power and we didn't have enough data to actually properly test the algorithms. So for years we just said the algorithms don't work. We're now hitting a point where many of those algorithms are proven to work effectively because we've solved the two bits that were missing, the compute power, mainly through GPUs, and the large volumes and diversity of data. Is that what we're waiting for with homomorphic encryption, a generation or a generational shift in power?
We're not waiting for it anymore. We already have it. The essence of your question is correct. We needed the ability of the computer to come up to spec to enable us to do the homomorphic encryption. So yes, that's what we've been waiting for. However, because people have been taught a specific way, they believe that's the only way possible. And so currently these people in the labs at Microsoft and elsewhere, and I haven't seen them, so it's unfair for me to say, but they keep going down the same path without actually saying, hold on a minute, why don't we send an intern out to, I don't know, the local restroom and tell them to stay in there with a cup of coffee for the next 2 weeks and come out with something different. And instead of laughing at what that intern's got, actually saying, there might be something here that we can build on, and throwing away what you've been doing for the last 10 years, actually take it. And say, what we're doing has legs, but actually we might be doing it an incorrect way.
I remember in the early 1990s talking to companies who were doing fractal graphic software, and their engineers would sit on their own in a dark room trying to think up solutions to problems. Exactly that approach.
Exactly that. And now we have work groups and focus teams and nothing ever gets done. Thank you, 1990s.
But one of the interesting things here, though, is trying to make customers understand what end-to-end encryption really does mean, because they see the three segments of encryption and they assume that they just apply to the different domains. And as they transition through the domains, the encryption will change as it moves from at rest to in transit or wherever else it's going to be.
I think you hit the nail on the head, maybe without even realizing it, or maybe you did. Consumers, users, us, everybody who has data somewhere on somebody else's system. We are told it's secure. We're not told how it's secure. Going off down a rabbit hole right at this moment in time. Once upon a time, and we're all kind of the same age here, when you learned to drive a car, you learned how to change the oil, how to change the tire, and you weren't actually allowed to drive the car until you knew how to do those things. It's impossible to do that now with your car, or certainly with my car. It doesn't have an engine, but it's impossible to do that. With computers, things have changed. Now, instead of trying to educate the end user in how things are done, we should just be enabling them to believe us and proving to them that it is done so that they can get on and do their job. Instead of trying to educate them in saying, right, this is where this works, this is where this works, and this is where this works, we should be saying to them, this is what it does. You don't need to worry about how it does it. You do need to worry that it is being done, and we'll make sure that you can test that. That's really vital that you worry that it is being done, just in case something stops, and then you can see instantly whether it stops and your data is being let loose. But you shouldn't have to worry about how it's done anymore. We've moved on from the old PC 286 era. Now a computer is just one of those things. We've got these mobile phones, and you don't know how they work. You don't worry how they work. You're not worried how Microsoft Word comes up and makes something bold. You just know it does because you can see it. And that's how we in the industry should start treating encryption now. It's become that because it's become a political football. The politicians have suddenly realized a number of things, but two main things. One, they can win votes, and that's always important to a politician. Two, they suddenly can't see the shit that we're putting across the network. And that always worries politicians. All of a sudden, they see two opposite things. One, they can't see something, but two, a user doesn't want other people to see something, so they're going to suddenly come in and try and create laws. The first law is to go and get votes, to say, you nasty, nasty IT company, you mustn't do this without encrypting data or doing this or doing this. And that's turned data into a political football. And then on the other side, they've come in and said, you nasty IT company, you mustn't encrypt that data unless we can see it. The two don't actually work together. So the moment that the government comes in and says that that encryption algorithm has to have a back door, you've actually broken the GDPR. The governments have muddied the water and they've confused everybody. They've confused the industry and, more importantly, they've confused consumers. And worse still, and I'm not an apologist for the industry, I think the industry has some big apologies to make. Worse still, you have companies out there, I don't need to name them, but you have Facebook, which doesn't seem to give a damn about your privacy. And I said doesn't seem to. They may do, for all we know, but it doesn't come across like that. And until they show people that they truly do care about my data or your data or anybody else's data in this world, then the politicians are going to have fair game at them. So we need, as an industry, to show people we're serious. And then once we show people we're serious with their data, we at Shield IO don't store data for people, but if we did, the data you gave me wouldn't be my data. I wouldn't own it. There's a crux of this. You own it. It's your data. I'm using it, and it's actually got a value to me. We have a contract passed between us which allows me to use that. So for every record of yours I've got, it's worth $1.50 to me, or whatever it happens to be. So it's a monetary value, and the companies need to start looking at it as a monetary value. Don't drop your $10 note on the floor or leave it on the Starbucks table. You will put it in your wallet, the wallet goes in your pocket, and your pocket is nice and secure with you at all times. You keep it safe, you keep it secure. Look at data in exactly the same way, all of us in the industry, and then we won't have these issues.
But we've been down this line with developers already. If we go back to late 80s, early 1990s, we all wrote our own network drivers, IPX, SPX, whatever network we were working with. And then suddenly we told developers, oh, just assume the network's there. We've done the same with multiple types of technology as we've moved forward. The same is true to some degree of users. They assume the network is there, they can connect to the internet, they can send email. Why has encryption become this more complicated, problematical issue?
Is it? All right, let me change it around. Let me answer you the question. Should that data always be applied in clear?
But there's an interesting challenge here, isn't there? We're moving to smart cities, and smart cities need data. Cities are generally bankrupt. They don't have enough money to deliver the services they want. The more data they can take off citizens, potentially the more people they can allow to access that data or they can license that data to. But that data is always licensed in clear. If we apply the encryption that you're doing, and we look at what a smart city might want to do with access to the data to a wide group of people, and the fact that governments want backdoors, and quite frankly, it's a stupid idea because nobody trusts the government to keep it safe in the first place. Is it possible to take your type of encryption, where the data never comes into clear, allow those people to create their queries against data sets, whether they be an intelligence agency or a commercial entity, and then fire that encrypted query against the encrypted data? So what they actually get back at the end of the day is only the target of what they were looking for, rather than this mass of data through which they control and misuse.
Yes, very simple. And again, trying to keep away from products, but we do have a product called Developer Shield, which never stores encrypted data. It enables homomorphic transactions to take place. It enables you to search on real data. It enables you to do mathematical equations. It enables you to do analytics on real data. But there's no way you can decrypt the data back into its original format because it doesn't actually reside in the database or in there. So yes, that you can do. Likewise, you could have data which can be pulled out because there are some reasons why you actually want to see the original data and you have rights to see the original data. A call center, always a simple example. You ring up from a call center. Hi, Simon. Prove me you're you. Last four parts of a social security number. You never want to see the whole social security number. You never want to see the last four. But if a Boolean true false comes back, and some false data comes back into the application's not broken. They know it's true. If nothing comes back, they know it's false. Likewise, though, they may actually want to see my name or the notes. And the notes are very important, because in the notes, there might be some information that must be encrypted. However, the person on the call center also needs to know them, otherwise they can't help you. So that would then come back decrypted to display to you. So there are times when you do need to decrypt data. Most of the time you don't. You just need to do some kind of analysis of the data, whether it's just a pure search or actual true analytics, and that is with the smart cities. Data has a value. As I said, we're all of a certain age here. Many years ago, we used to know data as king. Then we forgot about data as king, and data became this thing that just got in the way of everything, and the network was it. But we forgot that stuff went back and forth on the network, and that stuff generally was data. Without data, there is no need for the network. We're now suddenly realizing that data actually is valuable. And it's not just valuable, it has a massive value. Organizations such as Chevrolet, General Motors, they believe that they're going to take more from their data than they will from cars in time to come. More revenue. Now, if you think of that from a big manufacturer like General Motors, it tells you how important data is going to be. It has a huge value because of this connected city. But in their instance, cars, where have you gone? How long did you drive the car? How many passengers are in the car? How fast are you going? All of that information is in that car and gets pushed back. I have a Tesla. Many months ago now, it seems like many years ago now since I've had my car, I had a crash, completely my fault, wrote off the car in front of me. Before I'd even woken up necessarily from the, oh my God, I've just hit some poor cow. Tesla on the phone telling me I'd had a crash, making sure I was okay, because the car had phoned home. That's how cars are going. They're incredible. All of this information is going out. And that's really, really good. As a consumer, I love that. I think it's brilliant. As a consumer, it also worries me that these people don't know how to look after my data and they'll just give it to any Tom, Dick and Harry when they come knocking on the database and hack it.
But this raises an issue of usage. We've always assumed that to encrypt data requires processing cycles. If we look at the generous estimates that are being thrown around per connected car per day of 25 gigabytes, that's a lot of data to transmit. More importantly, that's a lot of data that's going to be in tiny little segments that if we're going to encrypt to transmit is going to consume more processing power than most people's servers in their offices if we're not careful. To go back to your example of the call center, how do we restate the data classification as to what should be encrypted and always stay encrypted? What should be encrypted and come into clear? It's the military problem. Everything is sensitive data until you look at it and actually most of it really isn't.
But then you do have the other issue, and I'll come on to the processing power separately, but this is one of my bete noirs. But the other issue is you have all this data and you know that some must be encrypted. Zip code must be encrypted. Social security number must be encrypted. Then you have other bits of data that you think that I don't need encrypted. First name, everyone's named Simon. So many Simons in this world, it's kind of irrelevant. But then if you manage to search for Simon and my street address or Simon and my city, then we started to narrow down. So maybe Simon needs to be encrypted as well, the first name. That's a really difficult one. That whole process of saying what should and shouldn't be encrypted is a big job, however big or small the database is.
But this now comes back to the use case. If we're talking about personally identifiable data like your name, your date of birth, blood group, metadata, this sort of thing, encryption, yes. But when we think about the data coming from the car, how much of that for General Motors or how much of that for Tesla or how much of that for any auto manufacturer would require to be encrypted?
I don't know the data set fully, but from the small knowledge I have, there's certain pieces of information that need to be encrypted. VIN number, which will always go with it because it's the identification number. The GPS positioning should always be done. There shouldn't be any data in there going back about who I am anyway. I would be very upset because that should already be in the Tesla data centers and they should be able to analyze through the VIN number. But definitely the VIN number, definitely the GPS tracking should be encrypted. However, this is where I do take my own personal view, and this hasn't always been my view. My own personal view is maybe we got to the point where it's easier to encrypt everything now than it is to not have everything encrypted.
Because exceptions create problems.
Exceptions create problems. So how do we do that? All the processing and everything else you do, you talked about. We do it by doing it correctly. We do it by looking at the libraries that people use, the APIs people use, and say, why are they programmed so sloppily? We come back to the 1980s and 1990s. Back in the 1980s and 1990s, and I think there's a couple of programmers here at least, how many times would you write a program that needed 4 gig of RAM to run? Didn't happen, because there was no 4 gig of RAM. Yet we still managed to get them to run. We still managed to send a spacecraft to the moon. Now, obviously, what we have now is much more powerful, but the basic job is the same. We're doing it a lot quicker, and we're doing various bits and pieces, and we're encrypting stuff, and they weren't necessarily then, although actually they were. We have become sloppy programmers.
But have we become sloppy programmers because we've tried to democratize this to get more people in because we want more programmers and we don't want to take the time to do it in a different way?
I don't know the answer. I just know we've become sloppy, and I know that we need to become unsloppy. So whenever we take a new person on, and we have, just actually in the last week taken on a new developer, we tend to train them from scratch on development again, because we don't use APIs apart from one. We only use one external API. We teach them from the ground up about memory management. You only have so much memory, don't abuse it. Processing power. You only have so much processing power, don't abuse it. Pretend you don't have much. Pretend you've only got 64-bit of memory. And then we go from the absolute basics of what we all do in life is we search. Everything we do is about searching. We get up in the morning and look for our glasses. Yeah, it's the first thing I do. We search around, we search. And then as humans, we use text, we use vocal, we use write it down or hand language, sign language, but we use some form of text. And so text manipulation is the second most important thing of a computer. Text manipulation and search go hand in hand. Teach people how to manipulate text and strings correctly. Teach them how to manage that memory with that manipulation correctly. Then you'll find things go a lot, lot faster. If you teach them how to build Lego bricks from other people's APIs, you are not creating developers. You are creating Lego brick builders.
But that's where we're telling the development community it's going.
No, hold on. I'm going to pull up with that. That's not where we are telling the developer community going. That's where organizations who sell these APIs are telling developers they're going.
But we're back to the whole object-orientated argument from 1988, that the world would only need a very small number of proper programmers because everybody else would assemble the objects they created. If we look at the gap between then and maybe 7 years ago, we really didn't revisit that much at all. And then suddenly, boom, along comes composable environments. IBM's Bluemix kicked off a whole pile of low-code, no-code things going forward. Companies have jumped on it. Companies want everybody to be a programmer. Why? Because luminaries in this industry stand up on stage and say every company's a software company. So how do we fix that without re-educating people to a level that, quite frankly, most people will never get to? Because most people would never be able to do machine code programming.
No, I'm a snob, if you just guess. I'm a programming snob. Let's just get that on the cards on the table. But I think you've hit two different audiences. Those programs are absolute necessity for organizations so that a marketing department can go and put something together really quickly. Vital that they can do that. Actually, really good use of time to do that. But they shouldn't be writing encryption algorithms, and they shouldn't be pulling in encryption algorithms on that. Because the moment you need that data encrypted, then that's a program.
But why are we pulling them in at all? Earlier, I said if we looked at what we did with networks was we made them invisible. We've made other things invisible to the developer. If we look at containers that are coming along, the security for containers, we're talking about putting it in the framework so the developer never sees security. It is just there. Why can we not do this with encryption?
I agree with you. We should, and we will. We're an encryption company. I don't like to say we're a security company. It's like saying a wheel is a car. It's not. A wheel is part of a car. Encryption is part of the security ecosystem. The way we deploy our system is on a driver, a JDBC or an ODBC driver. It should just be there. You shouldn't have to program for it. It should be something that is just there for the user or is just there for the programmer, and let the programmer actually get on and do what their speciality is. My speciality is not user interfaces. I'll let somebody else do user interfaces. So yes, it should just be part of it. It's a driver. Go and plug in the driver between you and the database. The database should always be encrypted. It shouldn't be a choice. You shouldn't need to make that choice. It should just be done. But we are not there yet, I'm afraid, for very many reasons.
But this brings us back to a question I asked earlier, and that is why? If we look at the demand in the industry for various things, people want this. They're being told they've got to have it. Why is it so hard to change our programming paradigm to make encryption just part of the framework, effectively invisible to the developer?
I don't know, because we provide it as a driver. So I can't answer that question because I just don't understand why people think it's hard. And I know I'm going to get absolutely hammered for that last comment, but that's life. Won't be anything new. What I will add on to that is I think consumers are scared. Consumers are misled. And consumers don't know where to turn. And that is a problem at the moment. And that is a problem with us as technologists. We're not leading them in the right place. And in a lot of instances, we're leading them down the wrong place because we're allowing data to be stolen. If you look at where data is stolen from currently, I don't know of one instance where an encrypted database has had data taken from it without the key store being stolen and having the data decrypted. Actually, encrypted database.
It's an interesting statement because when I talk to various people who are close to intelligence organizations, their view is a lot of this encrypted data is being hoarded by governments around the world. They are themselves acquiring these databases and they are simply waiting for the point when they can break that encryption. Whilst for a lot of consumers, that will have little impact because it will have no value. For businesses, for intellectual property, and in particularly for governments, this data has long-term value and long-term sensitivity. So should we be looking at our longer data sets, our older data sets? I asked this at the beginning, and re-encrypt them.
As an organisation, the data you have today could be seen as more important than the data you had yesterday. However, as an organisation, most of what you do today came from yesterday. If that data hasn't been made publicly available, then yes, it should be encrypted. And yes, you should refresh your encryption, because things get slow, things get out of date, things get broken. So yes, you should refresh your encryption. Can we refresh encryption? Of course we can. But coming back to my point of encryption itself hasn't been broken yet. Encryption keys have been stolen. And that is really, really important, because a lot of people are putting their data on the cloud and they're assuming it's safe. In a lot of cases, the perception is it's not safe as well. Now, obviously, with most of these large organizations, they're going to spend more money on security than you would with your server underneath the stairs, however big your server and your staircase is. A cloud company such as Oracle or Google, they're going to spend billions of dollars on security. However, if they have your key store, that security is worthless, as we saw from Capital One. The moment that you pass that key to somebody else, you only have yourself to blame. And this comes down again to how is the consumer meant to know? They're relying on us as technologists to do this. How do they know where the weak points are? We need to be more open about encryption. We need to tell them where it is, how it is, what it is. We shouldn't be a dark art. And that's what it is at the moment. It should just be.
It's a wonderful conundrum, isn't it? By its very nature, encryption is all about secrecy. Yet we need to stop being secret.
We need to stop being secret. It's not to say we need to stop being secret about any keys that we utilize, but it's about the fact that it's done and how it's done, where it's done. That is what we need to stop being secretive about. I also think we need to be more open about hacks. We shouldn't hide away from the fact that a company's been hacked. It shouldn't be a shameful thing necessarily for that company unless they used admin and admin as the username and password. And if they use admin and admin for the username and password, and they happen to manage the ability for anybody to get a bank account or a loan or anything else, then personally I think they should be wound up. And again, I'm open to being whatever on that one. But Equifax, you deserve everything that's coming to you. But even there, that said, they were told, and my guess is that the person who left that admin and admin on there at that time had so much else that he had to get on to make sure the security on the database elsewhere was right, to make sure the perimeter was knocked up, to make sure TDE was put in place, that it just happened to bypass them. So actually, we know accidents happen, part of life. So Equifax, in some ways, I'll forgive you, but it shouldn't happen. There should be checks and balances in place to not enable that to happen. But actually, if we look going forward, and I don't want to stroke Larry's ego because he really doesn't need it stroked that high, but we've talked about, just prior to starting this, the Autonomous Database. If we look at the Autonomous Database, what it does, it actually does take some of that stuff away. One of the reasons we're Oracle partners is because someone in Oracle many moons ago took a look at what I did and said, hold on a minute, you've got the same problem as we do with the Autonomous Database. You just do. You let people get on with using their data. We let people get on using their database and take the boring parts away. So that's why we came up with the partnership there. More and more we're going to go down this route. Amazon are coming up with something similar. Google have obviously already got something similar, where we take away the mundane tasks and we leave people to be able to do the job that they're meant to do. And in this instance, I come back and hammer Equifax. The job was to make sure that that database itself was hardened up and secured without worrying about patching it, without worrying about all that extraneous information, because they know that that's done and they're with a provider they can or cannot trust. In the meantime, they get on and do a proper username and password as the manual tells them to. If we take a lot of that grunt work away from people and then we're open about where the hacks come, and we're open about what security is and what it isn't, then I think a lot of the attacks that governments are putting on the industry will disappear, and a lot more trust will come from consumers back to us. And I think it's that trust that's got lost as consumers saw a dark art, but more important is they saw their stuff wasn't being secured up, and we lost that trust.
I think we lost it in other ways as well. From my perspective, it is about getting trust, but that trust now has become predicated on this thing called encryption, that nobody understands, that the IT departments assume they've bought a product that will make it happen. I worry that we are going down a line where we're building on sand in terms of people's knowledge and competency.
If I can just go on to that, because I absolutely fully agree with you. I think it goes deeper than that, I'm afraid. It comes down to the base of what we're trying to do and the base of how people's knowledge base is built up and how people believe security should be. So if we look at TDE, we've already said the only time it's going to protect you is if someone goes into a data center with a swag bag. It's as good as useless elsewhere. However, for CCPA, for GDPR, and for all those other regulations, it's good enough. That's bad, because that actually tells the consumer that there's a use to it, and they believe because of that. So we need to relook at regulations. But then you have other technologies, column-level encryption. organizations spend millions of dollars each year on column level encryption, only to find it doesn't do what they expected it to do, because they no longer can do their MDM, their management database project, because to decrypt 15 million columns each night before pulling in another 15 million so they can search against them isn't going to work. And so again, the industry has led people down a garden path. And too many times, and I can only talk about this industry, but too many times we've led people down a garden path on what we want them to do, not what is actually in the best interest of them to do. You may have guessed I'm never likely to be rich. But I do think it's a time where we need encryption to be true. We need it to work. And it's very easy to find out if encryption works. Out of everything in technology, it's the easiest thing to find out whether it works or not. We need it to work, and we need it just to be. It mustn't be a dark art. It must just be. That's going to take an awful lot more work. And I think it's going to take a very special vendor, and of course we are very special in many ways, but it's going to take a very special one of the large vendors to come along and say, do you know what? We need to stop farting around on the outside of this, and we need to look properly at what the homomorphic companies are doing. We are a form of homomorphic encryption. There are three or four other organizations out there. And I do think that the large vendors need to say, hold on a minute, we need to look at this. And then when they look at it, they see how much money there is to be made on it, then they'll jump on board. But they also need to look at it not just for that, but actually for their consumers. The same way that Oracle has bought the Autonomous Database out. It's not just to make more money, not just to make a quick buck against Amazon and everybody else, but actually to say, we think you need to get on and do your job. We're better at doing this because we wrote this stuff. So we can do this better than you can anyway. Someone needs to have the same level of confidence and probably balls to do the same with encryption, because it will take a lot of guts to do that.
I look forward to us finding somebody who's got that. Simon, thank you